Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to The Cross in the Desert, speaking hope and freedom to Iran. I'm your host, Randy L. Noble. Glad to be here today. Last night was a scary night for Becky and me. We spent about an hour in the basement after tornadoes were sighted just about 16 or 17 miles away from our home. And so we had here we had our cell phones, we had the dog. Let me tell you something, our dog does not like being chained to her leash and going in that basement. So we were down there in the basement for that time. She started chewing on everything. And we said, okay, Jesse, this is not the time for that. We have a tornado coming. But thankfully, the Lord diverted and dissipated that tornado. There was no damage. There was no lives lost. And we were very, very grateful. But I'll tell you what, when you're sitting there on your cell phone, you're watching video from the tracker in the car who's actually chasing the tornado, if you will, and then you're seeing the meteorologist on there showing us on his radar all these different locations, and calls are coming in, it's touchdown on the ground. It was a frightening 45 minutes, I have to say, and we were bracing ourselves, we were prepared for the worst situation, because about 4 years ago, one touched down here in Ferguson and in the Bridgeton area. So we haven't forgotten how close these tornadoes have come and had some significant damage. So last night was quite frightening. But the good news is Becky will be here today. She's my special guest on The Cross in the Desert. We're going to discuss the recent, and I mean the recent, attacks against our Constitution, and most recently, of course, the Supreme Court decision. Becky is a prolific writer, political writer for the Black Sphere, which is a website by Kevin Jackson, who is an author, and he appears as a host, or not as a host, as a contributor to Fox News very often. He's there. A great guy, very intelligent, very articulate. Well, Becky has her own radio program called The Conservative Cauldron. We kind of share this account together. And so she's going to spend a few minutes this morning. We're going to talk about our Constitution. What is it with our culture that doesn't seem to have taken Constitution 101 class? I don't understand that. And even these five justices didn't seem to take it either. And I know that sounds a little bit, you know, belligerent. These are the Supreme Court justices. How can you say that? Well, we're going to talk about something called the 10th Amendment today. And we're going to lay out our whole scenario based on just that amendment that gives states' rights, the right to choose and vote on an issue. And they were ignored. We're going to talk about that a little bit later on the Cross in the Desert. But right now, most importantly, is today is Monday, June 29th. Saeed Abedini and Amir Hikmati still languish in Iranian prison. One more day for the deadline to the Iran nuclear talks. And again, it's all about nuclear rights versus human rights. I want you to hear this special program right now between KT McFarland and Claire Lopez on the Iran nuke deal right now on the Cross in the Desert. Let's listen.
Welcome to DEFCON 3. I'm KT McFarland. The deadline of June 30th is quickly approaching for the U.S. and its partners to reach a deal with Iran over its controversial nuclear program. Some diplomats, they're worried that these stalled negotiations will prevent a final deal. And others are worried about what would be in a final deal. Well, here's reaction from Claire Lopez of the Center for Security Policy. Claire, thanks for joining us. Let me
Thank
ask you.
You,
is whatever is in this deal, number one, is it verifiable?
No, it can hardly be verifiable, and that's basically cooked into the deal itself. You know, there are three parts to a nuclear deliverable nuclear weapon program, and that's the enriched uranium, it is the warhead itself, and the missile delivery system.
Mm-hmm.
And on each one of those, from what we're hearing out of the talks, the U.S. side has capitulated to Iran, and in particular, because there is no requirement that there be any time, any place inspections of any site that the IAEA, International Atomic Energy Agency, wants to check, there's no way to verify the agreement if one is reached.
Okay, so if there's no way to verify it, then you're not going to know if they're cheating. But let's assume somehow you did know if they were cheating after the deal was done. Is there a way of enforcing the agreement? Is there any way of punishing them or incentivizing them for keeping a deal?
Well, as you know, the IAEA itself has no enforcement capability, and the only way that it can bring a violation to account would be to bring it up to the United Nations Security Council. That is the same P5 now negotiating away, capitulating on every key point of the negotiations right now.
So what are the other countries in the region? They're looking at this and saying, okay, we see if even if there is a deal, we're not buying it. We're not believing that Iran is going to stop its nuclear program. Talk me through what happens, say, if on day one we sign the deal. What happens on day two?
Well, it starts way before the deal is signed, if one ever is, and that is the very real danger of regional nuclear proliferation. We already have heard reports for more than 10 years already that the Saudis had been talking with the Pakistanis. The Pakistanis, of course, the ones who gave Iran its first head start, blueprints, technical knowledge, centrifuge parts, to get its nuclear weapons program started back in the 1980s.
Mm-hmm.
And we hear that Saudi Arabia has been discussing with Pakistan some kind of an arrangement under which the Saudis would have access to a nuclear deterrent or a nuclear bomb capability to counter the Iranians.
One of the things that's not part of this deal is Iran's support for terrorism around the world. How would a nuclear deal with Iran affect that?
Well, not at all. Just as you say, KT, the Iranian support for jihadist organizations like Hamas, Hezbollah, its decades-long cooperation with al-Qaeda, its support for the Houthi rebels down in Yemen, its support to the Iraqi Shiite militias now in taking so much of a dominant role inside of Iraq. None of that is part of the talks. Not any of it is allowed to be discussed, as are many other things not on the table. Iran's missile program, Iran's human rights abuses against its own people, none of that up for discussion.
Claire, let me just ask you one final question. Is no deal better than this deal?
Yes, no deal is absolutely better than this deal. This deal needs to be dumped. It needs to be stopped, and Congress needs to take up its responsibility to review any deal that might come across, that might be signed, and to turn it down, to sign, make sure that the United States does not accede to such a deal as we see shaping up from all indicators right now.
Okay, so then that leads to one final question. Can Congress stop this deal?
Yes, Congress could stop it. Technically, according to the agreement reached in the House and the Senate, the Congress has now given itself authority. It's sort of in reverse, but it needs a two-thirds majority, a supermajority in the Congress to turn down a deal, and that's what they must muster. If the Obama administration and the Kerry team sign an agreement with Iran that concedes on all of these points, enrichment, a warhead, missiles, no terrorism, accountability, human rights, American hostages being held in Iran, if all of that is left conceded to the Iranians, it is Congress's responsibility, yes, and their ability to vote this deal down.
Okay, well, thanks so much for explaining all that. Clara Lopez from the Center for Security Policy. Check out FoxNews.com for more on the Iran nuclear talks. And I'm KT McFarland. Thanks for watching DEFCON 3.
Well, I'm sitting here asking myself, what on earth are we doing sitting across the table from the number one state sponsor of terrorism in the world? That being said, why hasn't Saeed and Amir been made preconditions? Why is it that we are sacrificing our American citizens for nuclear rights? Well, it shouldn't shock us all after you look at this last past week. Gay rights in all 50 states, Obamacare, the law of the land. Should I go on anymore? So it's the scenario that Saeed and Amir and the two other Americans sit as hostages in Iran. And I'll say this again and again. In 1979, when Carter was president, and this debacle happened with over more American hostages in Iran, it took a presidential change to bring them home. It wasn't until Ronald Reagan took the oath of office that our hostages came home from Iran. I hope that I am wrong about this. I hope with all of my heart that something positive happens before 2017. But this is what the scenario was back in 1979. And I'm hoping and praying that this will not linger on anymore. Can you imagine if your Nagme days missed, anniversaries missed? That's right. I believe at the end of this month is their anniversary. And I just can't imagine the heartache involved of sitting at home or traveling on the road without your husband for 3 years. It's heart-wrenching for the Amir Hikmati family, Amir's father dying of brain cancer, and he sits languishing in a prison in Iran. And this is unacceptable. But when I look back at this past week and see the debacle of our nation, everyone has changed to rainbow, but they have forgotten that the very laws of the land enacted, written down, and codified by our founding fathers was ignored in this latest decision by the five justices. We're going to talk about that a little bit later. As I mentioned, Amir and Saeed linger in prison. It was just this past Tuesday, 6 days ago, marked the 1,000 days for Saeed in prison. It's now 1,006. There was a special ceremony for him, and this is a little glimpse of what that ceremony was about. Right now, we're going to listen to it on the cross in the desert.
It's a swelteringly hot day here on the west lawn of the U.S. Capitol. We just had a service of remembrance and prayer for Pastor Saeed Abedini, now 1,000 days incarcerated in a prison in Iran. And here's one thing I wanted to point out. We had two news networks, only two, show up to cover this story. One is the Christian Broadcasting Network, CBN. You'll see the story there. But the other was Al Jazeera, the Middle Eastern news agency. They were the only other news network to show up to cover this. And the reason that's so interesting is, first of all, of course, Christian news media, God bless them for being there to cover this story, so relevant to any of us who are commanded in the Bible to remember those who are in chains, those who are suffering. But Al Jazeera, why is that so important? Because that's the news network that's going to get over to the Middle East and into Iran. They're never going to see the Christian Broadcasting Network. That'll be filtered out. But Al Jazeera gets in. So God knows what he's doing. The story will get into Iran as much as all over the rest of the world. Wow. Praise God.
Yes, it's an amazing event that took place with Saeed's imprisonment reaching the milestone of 1,000 days. They laid actually flowers all over a walkway in remembrance of Saeed. And isn't it amazing how the story of Saeed will penetrate through the Iranian barrier, providence, by our great God? I want to read to you Nagmeh's status from this morning. I think it's from this morning or late last night before this morning on her Facebook page. And it's about Christian persecution coming to America. And I think that she's hinting at, although she doesn't say for sure, what happened last Friday with the Supreme Court decision. But I want to read this to you because it's very relevant to you and me as Christians. Nagmeh writes, "I am not worried or afraid of Christian persecution coming to America. Jesus says that as believers, we would be persecuted because we choose to follow Jesus Christ. God is bigger than anything that comes our way, and he will use it for the gospel. I have seen this clearly in Saeed's imprisonment in Iran. We have seen this in the days of the apostles and the early church. We have seen it throughout church history. Persecution wakes up the church and helps spread the gospel message. What has caused me great concern has been the state of the church has been in the last few decades. Our hearts have been growing cold, and we have been falling asleep. And as a result, we have become the same religious leaders that Jesus had issues with. We are no longer defined by our radical love, but we are known for what we are against. It is easier for us to throw stones and justify it by calling it standing up for righteousness, rather than to lay down our lives for our enemies and plead with God on their behalf. Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. We struggle with pornography, sex before marriage, gossip, slander, hate, anger, vile language, and the many, many other sins that are so easily entangling us. And yet we dare to throw righteous stones at the sinners. We have become upside down in our thinking and have lost touch with the heart of God and his love for humanity. Our country is falling apart, and we blame it on the, quote, sinners. While all along it is because we have strayed from God. We, as Christians, hold the key to revival and healing in our land. 2 Chronicles 7:14 in the New King James Version says, quote, if my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and will forgive their sin and heal their land. Note, I did not mean to throw stones at anyone, Nagmeh writes, just to say we need to wake up before it's too late. When the people of God cry out, there is always a turnaround, praying for revival." And that's Nagmeh. Well, I think that she's getting at something that all of us can be guilty of doing, behaving like the Pharisees and the scribes, and blaming it on this special interest group and that special interest group, when we need to look to our own selves and cry out to God for revival. I agree with Nagmeh's insight into that. This past Friday was a historic Friday for our country, perhaps the world, as same-sex marriage was legalized in all 50 states by a 5-4 decision of the Supreme Court. And one of the first things that Becky and I noticed about this process was the deliberate betrayal of our constitutional rights. But one of the questions we have in conjunction with that is, what does this mean for religious freedom? Will this mean that pastors will be required by the government, the law of the land, to marry same-sex partners? We're going to hear a special report on Neil Cavuto right now to answer that question on the cross in the desert. Let's listen.
There we go. West Virginia Attorney General Patrick Morrissey is here right now. Attorney General, it is, as we say, the law of the land right now. You've heard what Alabama is doing. What happens now? Obviously, the argument is you can't go higher than the Supreme Court. Morally, a lot of folks, Catholics, have been telling, well, we do answer to a higher authority. But here's a legal question I have for you. If I don't want to acknowledge this, I'm a business and I don't want to acknowledge it or offer benefits to gay workers or those who want to get married, have I violated the law? Am I in trouble?
Well, I think what we're seeing right now is that there could be significant implications from today's decisions. If you go back to the oral arguments before the Supreme Court, Solicitor General Verrilli was asked almost that exact question. What could happen to tax-exempt organizations? And what we're seeing is that this decision could represent a real threat for religious freedom. And we don't quite know the full implications of it yet. But if you're a tax-exempt organization or if you're a school and you still want to maintain your religious beliefs, there are some serious issues that will be percolating up over the next few months. I'm hopeful that we can begin to develop a consensus to hold the line for religious freedom.
But let me ask you about that, because we did make carve-outs and exemptions and special riders after the Roe v. Wade abortion decision that a lot of religious groups, Catholic hospitals and the like, wanted, got, and to this day enjoy, even though some have been taking those away when it comes to issues like birth control. I know this is a little bit different in that in the regard that it doesn't involve individual lives, but it is going to raise a question, and I wonder from a legal standpoint whether you could even make that comparison, because a number of those who are opposed to gay marriage are going to make that argument on religious grounds. So one thing with abortion, is it the same with this?
Well, I think that there really are very strong religious arguments that could be raised here, and for a couple of different reasons. We know that there are a lot of individuals that hold religious beliefs that are really rooted, and they're protected under the First Amendment. So I think, you know, there may be some questions that arise about interpretations from today's case, which really invokes the 14th Amendment, and then the First Amendment, which really allows people to practice their religious beliefs freely. I think that the jury's still out as to how far sweeping this will be, but the next step's clearly going to be looking at those tax-exempt organizations and churches and schools, and that's something, once again, it's a little early to know exactly how it will play out, but I think that there are strong First Amendment defenses to moving the line further down.
By the way, as you're speaking, Attorney General, Texas now serving gay licenses, and the first gay couple to marry there getting a license in Bexar County, Texas.
Well, the religious freedom aspect is where I am most concerned about, because remember a couple of years ago, the IRS and the scandal with the tax-exempt conservative groups weren't allowing them their tax-free exemptions. They would send in their petition for this, and they wouldn't answer them. It would be hanging in limbo. Then they would call certain people from the Tea Party and ask them very pointed questions, and they were being denied a tax-exempt status. And this is really the same situation, I think, in so many other ways. The tentacle, the octopus tentacle, is wrapping itself around our religious freedom via the same-sex marriage law now. We're going to get some more insight into this as the days go on. I'm very interested to hear Fox News do an in-depth report about this. We'll probably see that tonight when we both get home from work, but there's a lot of things that are going to be discussed, a lot of programs, a lot of issues. But again, we don't know every bit of the implications yet. For those that are pastors of church, I know they would stand against this law. I know I would. That I would have nothing to do with that. This is what I believe the Bible teaches, and I have to be loyal to God. I have to obey God rather than man. So I know where pastors would stand on this. I know how they would feel. I know that there are concerns in the church about this issue as we speak. Exactly what is going to be the strategy? There are some liberal churches that will cave and give in to this kind of movement. Remember, the gay audience that we're talking about comprises maybe 3% of our population, and look at the groundswell they caused in 1 or 2 days. What is it about us as conservatives? Why can't we get that kind of groundswell and that kind of promotion in 2 to 3 days? What if we took a cause to the forefront? Well, think about it this way. Christians are the minority in so many ways. You look through church history, under the Roman Empire, persecution. The minority was persecuted all the time. And this is a test for the Christian church. Make no mistake about it. We want to know where our religious freedom, our tax-exempt status, will stand in relationship to this decision. Well, a man that I am totally behind, who's running for president in 2016, and our good friend, Becky and I, Julie Prince, very strong supporter. And who am I talking about? Mr. Ted Cruz. He had some words of wisdom about this decision. Let's listen to it right now on the cross in the desert.
With us, how are you, Senator?
Sean, how are you doing? Today, it's some of the darkest 24 hours in our nation's history.
I couldn't say it more eloquently. I loved your comments yesterday where you said, you know, hey, listen, they're not calling balls and strikes. They've joined the team, and the team is hurting Americans. And you said if they want, they can retire from the court, and if they want to write laws, they can become legislators like you are.
That is exactly right. Yesterday and today were both naked and shameless judicial activism. It is neither decision. The decision yesterday, rewriting Obamacare.
For the second time.
For the second time, six justices joined the Obama administration. You now have Barack Obama, Kathleen Sebelius, and six justices responsible for forcing this failed disaster of a law on millions of Americans and simply rewriting the law in a way that is fundamentally contrary to their judicial oaths. And then today, this radical decision purporting to strike down the marriage laws of every state. It has no connection to the United States Constitution. They are simply making it up. It is lawless, and in doing so, they have undermined the fundamental legitimacy of the United States Supreme Court.
What recourse, people keep asking me, what recourse is available? The only thing that I can think of, I go back to Levin's book, The Liberty Amendments, and that is, you know, Convention of the States. I don't know what other recourses available. Can you think of any?
Yeah, there are a number of recourses we have. Let's focus both on substance and then the broader structural problem of a lawless court. On substance, on marriage, I've introduced a constitutional amendment that would protect the authority of state legislatures to define marriage as a union of one man and one woman. We should pass that amendment. I've also introduced legislation stripping the federal courts of jurisdiction over legal assaults on marriage. The Constitution explicitly gives Congress the power to strip jurisdiction as a check on a lawless judiciary. We should use that. Now, the sad thing, Sean, is there aren't a whole lot of Republicans in Congress willing to stand and fight on either one of those.
You mean, Mike, now, when...
Well, some words of wisdom and warning from Senator Ted Cruz, who looks more and more every day like he could very well be the man that is left standing in 2016. I know there is a broad, broad spectrum of many, many candidates, from Marco Rubio to Rand Paul to Jeb Bush, Carly Fiorani, and I know I'm saying her name wrong. God, I don't know how we could do that to her. But there are many, many candidates out there. But the one that I see that stands for our patriotism, stands for our freedom, and looks like a man who is quite qualified, his convictions, patriot, standing tough on foreign policy against terrorism, he has a lot of good qualities, and he seems to be connecting well with people. He's a man of really strong convictions and very conservative. And as you heard him there speaking out on a landmark decision, Mr. Ted Cruz seems to be the man who could, at the end of the day, be that candidate in 2016. We will wait and see. There, like I said, there's a broad field out there, and things happen so quickly. And we will watch more as the debates begin to happen next year. And we will see how the candidates react with one another, what they say about the issues. Most importantly, was there any flip-flopping? And you always have to be very careful with candidates who have a conviction and a statement on the issue, then 6 months later they've changed their minds. So it's important to hold them accountable to their statements. And we will watch and see. I'm most interested in the debates that will be coming up and the things they will say about the issues, because, again, you know, it still happens in the political circles. Lots of candidates make promises they can't keep. They make statements on issues and then change their mind later on. So we will wait and see what is going to happen. It should be a very, very interesting 2016 when we will look at what the candidates really think about the issues. But right now, you heard what Ted Cruz thinks. You heard his convictions on this landmark decision as he talked there on the Sean Hannity radio program. So very interesting. I'm looking at a quote right now, waiting for my wife to call in, because we're going to talk about the constitutionality of this issue. Abraham Lincoln, of course, the president that struck down slavery, the Emancipation Proclamation, just a great president. And he said something very interesting in a quote. He says, "From whence then will danger come? If this nation is to be destroyed, it will be destroyed from within. If it is not destroyed from within, it will live from all time to come." Did you hear what Abraham Lincoln says? He's talking about, what is it that will erode our freedoms? What will attack us? Will it be an outside force? What is it that's going to make things difficult for us? From whence then will danger come? If this nation is to be destroyed, it will be destroyed from within. And that is frightening. Over 100 years ago, Abraham Lincoln looked at this situation and said, "I fear that our nation will be in trouble. It will be destroyed from within." And when we see what happened on Friday and we see the masses of people, it's frightening. Right now, my special guest is my wife, Becky Noble. She is host of her own radio program, The Conservative Cauldron, and a political writer for The Black Sphere. And welcome, Becky, to the cross in the desert.
Hello. Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Well, are you a little bit amazed that we're not broadcasting live from our basement?
Yeah, after last night, a little bit, yeah.
Yeah,
it was kind of scary.
It was scary. Well, I was just mentioning a couple things about you. I want our audience to be acquainted with you. So before we get into our subject, tell us a little bit about your passion for the Conservative Cauldron, your radio program, and also your writing skills for The Black Sphere, Kevin Jackson. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I started out as a blogger. My blog is called The Conservative Cauldron, and you can find it at blogger.com. And the reason it's called The Conservative Cauldron is because I'm a very proud conservative. I believe in pretty much everything conservatives believe in. I believe in smaller government. I believe in a strong military and a strong defense. I believe in having a strong presence overseas. I believe in capitalism and free markets. I believe in all those things. But I'm also a Wiccan, and usually I get a lot of double takes when I tell people that, but I find for myself that a lot of pagan and Wiccan beliefs actually do coincide, for lack of a better word I can think of at the moment, to that they actually are in line with conservative beliefs. And
yes,
so I do that, and I, like you said, I write for Kevin Jackson's website, The Black Sphere, theblacksphere.net. Got to give a shameless plug to our website.
Yes.
And I do Conservative Cauldron Radio right here on Blog Talk Radio on Friday at 11 a.m. Central.
Yes, I want you to make sure we plug that, because you're going to be talking even more about the issue on Friday than we're talking today.
Oh, yeah.
But yes, the common misconception about Wiccans is they dance naked in the woods. And there's so much misconceptions. I'm very glad that you have enumerated your stance on all the issues and on our political freedoms. We know there's a lot of liberal Wiccans out there, and maybe the Conservative Cauldron will make a difference in their lives. Maybe you can kind of stir the pot a little bit and get them on the right side, right?
That's what I hope to do. Not only that, but I want to educate people about what paganism and Wicca is and also what it's not. Because, like you said, people have a lot of misconceptions about that.
All right. To the issue at hand, Becky, I've just finished a quote from Abraham Lincoln. "From whence will danger come? If the nation is to be destroyed, it will be destroyed from within." Do you think our past president, great president, Abraham Lincoln, had some insights to just this past Friday's decision when he said our nation, if it's going to be destroyed, will be destroyed from within?
Well, I think it's a very prophetic quote, and a lot of people like to say, well, it's something that he never said, or it's you know, people take the quote out of context, but I think that it speaks for itself. And I think that it's he couldn't be more right at this point right now today. I mean, I think that we are almost being destroyed more from within than we are from our enemies abroad, because quite frankly, we're really not paying a whole lot of attention to our enemies abroad. While we are busy worried about Obamacare and who gets married and who does not, there was an attack in Tunisia over the weekend of tourists by I believe if it wasn't ISIS, it was an ISIS or Al-Qaeda related group. And there's things going, it continues to happen overseas, and we're just, we're just not paying attention. It's going to be to our detriment. It's going to be to our peril. Mm-hmm.
I'm glad you brought this up, because just last week there was a contest ISIS was holding about memorizing the Quran, and if you memorize it and can show you do, you get a Christian girl as a sex slave trade. They
right.
showed pictures of Christian girls in Iraq inside these cages. So here is what's happening abroad in Iran, Amir and Saeed, Christians being eradicated in Iraq, being displaced, genocide. The world is being turned upside down by terrorists, and President Obama goes to play golf. But now, and this is true, as you well know, this past Friday, Becky, our freedoms were once again under siege, and this time by 5 Supreme Court justices. Elaborate on that for us.
Well, you know, Barack Obama likes to tell people that he is by trade, that he is a constitutional lawyer. I'm beginning to believe at this point that the reason, if he is in fact a constitutional lawyer, he became one not to promote the concepts and ideals of the Constitution and to explain the Constitution so that people can understand it more clearly. I believe he became a constitutional lawyer in order to find ways to get around the Constitution, because that's what we're doing now. It's all it is for him and this administration is an obstacle. It's something to be gotten around. It's something to get one over on. And not just the decision on Obamacare last week, which said that people who don't live in states where Obamacare exchanges were set up, that they can still receive the federal subsidies in order to help pay for Obamacare. And when you have to help pay for that, that's a whole other topic for a whole other day. But because I think what people are more focused on is the Supreme Court decision on same-sex marriage. And I may part from my fellow conservatives on this, but the way I see it is that, well, first of all, I don't really care who gets married. It doesn't affect me on a daily basis who gets married and who does not. Quite frankly, maybe I'm getting to be kind of a libertarian in my old age, but I really don't think that the federal government should be involved in anybody's marriage. Why does anyone need a permission slip from the state or federal government to get married, first of all? Second of all, it really is more of a constitutional issue, because the 10th Amendment clearly states that any powers that are not enumerated in the Constitution as going to the federal government go to the state government and or the people. And over the course of the last, I don't know, year and a half, maybe even 2 years, there have been a whole host of states. I think that the number that stands out in my head is 37 states. 37 states total have put this on a ballot to a vote of the people in that state. You in your state, and pick a state. I can tell you, well, I'll get to that in a minute, but so this measure has been put on a ballot in 37 states for a vote of the people. Do you want to vote to ban gay marriage in your state? And of those 37 states, I believe all but 3 or 4 of them voted yes, that they wanted a ban. So, and Missouri included. In fact, the vote to ban gay marriage in Missouri was passed by 70%. So what essentially this five unelected people did on Friday was they said to the people in all of those states, well, too bad. Your vote doesn't count. We know what's better for your state than you do. And they completely, you know, pick an adjective. They completely trashed, they completely stomped on the 10th Amendment. And quite frankly, if you can do that with one amendment, how many others can you do it with?
You write very eloquently in your latest blog called Death to America. You ask the question, you remember that antiquated piece of parchment, the Constitution, don't you? This is the one that starts out with, we the people, and we the people were ignored on Friday.
Yeah, pretty much, pretty much. And that's another thing, too. You know, the left loves to say things like, oh, the Constitution is so outdated, it's so outmoded, oh, it's so... You know, we really should just get rid of it, or we should rewrite it, or no, because that's the genius of it. The genius of the Constitution actually was written, and like I said in my blog, was written by ordinary men, but those ordinary men knew human nature, and they knew that humans like power, and they want to amass more and more of it all the time. It's like a drug, and they put those checks and balances in the Constitution to try to ward that off. And this government that we have right now today, this is exactly what they tried to warn us about, exactly. And Barack Obama is exactly the kind of president that they tried to warn us about. Because, while we're so busy worrying about Obamacare and gay marriage, how many more executive orders has he passed through, you know, under the radar that nobody has seen or heard about?
This is interesting what you just bring up, because your title of your blog, Death to America, goes back to the Death to America chants from Iran and all the Middle Eastern countries, but there's a Death to America coming from within, like Abraham Lincoln mentioned. Now, the tax-exempt status, I think, is the issue I want to just kind of gravitate towards now. A lot of pastors are wondering if they don't perform same-sex marriages that they will lose their 501c3.
Well, there's from what I've seen, you know, and I don't think a lot happened with it over the weekend, but you're going to see more activity, I think, this week, is that there are at least three or four states, I want to say Mississippi, Alabama, and Georgia. Again, I could be wrong, but I think those are the states that stand out in my mind, that they are considering just continuing issuing marriage licenses to anybody. And I also saw this morning that the Attorney General of Texas has informed people who work, like, in the county clerk's office and places like that, that if issuing a marriage license to a same-sex couple goes against their religious beliefs, they don't have to do that. And one of the things that I'm going to be writing about this week for the Black Sphere, and I'm going to be doing some research on, is what exactly are, because really briefly, I think on Friday, I heard several people say, oh, well, there's going to be religious exemptions. There's going to be religious exemptions. Well, what are they? What do they entail? What's the deal with them? So, but we haven't heard anything more about that. So that, again, you're right. That's something that I want to know about. What are the religious exemptions? And what if a church does? What if they say, no, I'm sorry, but you cannot hold your ceremony in our facility?
It's frightening. It's something to think about. I want to take us to some more of the amendments, because I know you have some things to do here, and I want to respect your time. We're talking briefly about the 10th Amendment. What other amendments have been under attack, and give us some examples?
Well, I mean, there's attacks on the First Amendment every day. You know, even in regards to this issue, you know, that people who feel differently are called bigots. They're called – I've had someone in my own family, imply that I'm a bigot because I'm not looking at this in the correct way that they want me to. And you know what? That's too bad, because this is America. This is where we have freedom of thought and freedom of speech. And the First Amendment is designed not for the kind of speech that you like. It's specifically designed to protect the speech that we don't like. And we're getting to be more and more, we're getting to be a society that, well, if you don't like what Joe Blow over here has to say, just shut him down. Just shut him up. And that's not what America is about. Of course, right after that horrible, horrible shooting in Charleston, of course, the Second Amendment was attacked. And I don't think that it was an guns don't act on their own. People have to pull a trigger. It's the nut behind the wheel, so to speak. And so we see assault on the Second Amendment all the time as well.
Well, we hear about these attacks on our Constitution, and I'm appalled, Becky, that very few people in our culture, our Facebook culture, really even know the Constitution. So they're so busy putting up the rainbow picture on their profile page. They're so busy doing the rainbow thing, and they have no idea that these five justices basically snubbed the 10th Amendment. They're ignorant of the Constitution. What do we do to educate people and to get them interested in one of the most precious documents that we possess?
Well, the problem is that it's not taught in public schools anymore. You know, parochial schools, private schools, I don't know. It could be. But as far as public schools, when I was in the ninth grade 100 years ago, we had to take a year-long class on government. There was a semester of you learned how the federal government works and a semester on how the state government worked. That's not taught anymore. And I think it's done for a reason, because if you dumb down the masses and they don't know how government is supposed to work, then they don't know that this is wrong. And that's a classic Karl Marx move. Dumb down the masses. Mm-hmm. Don't let them know that what you're doing is wrong and or illegal. So
yes,
it's a concerted effort to so that people don't know what the Constitution is and what it says and what it does.
At the end of your blog, you make a very proliptic statement. I want to read this. She asked, but one more question. If we have done this to four of the first 10 amendments, the Bill of Rights, how many more will we do it to? We are almost halfway there. Does this mean that the fundamental transformation is nearly complete? Explain to our listeners what you're referring to when you say the fundamental transformation is nearly complete.
Well, conservatives like to talk about this. We like to throw this quote around all the time, but I just think there's just so much to it. About 5 days before the 2008 presidential election, now President Obama was speaking to a huge crowd of supporters, and how he addressed them, I might be paraphrasing, but basically what he said was, we are 5 days away from fundamentally transforming America. Well, if you love America, why do you need to fundamentally transform it? And
exactly.
Right now, he's got about a year and a half to go. So he and his minions know that they have about a year and a half left to go, so they need to work quick. And my question is, you know, look all around you. Look at the fundamental transformation. Look at the unemployment rate. Look at our status overseas. Look at the economy. Look at any aspect of this nation. And you tell me that is the fundamental transformation complete? Because if we're not there, we're very close.
Mm. This goes back to the movie by Dinesh D'Souza, 2016, where he predicted this. And just recently, Dinesh says, see, I told you so. He made these references to the transformation that's taking place.
Right. And the next president, whoever he or she is, the enormity of the mess that they're going to have to clean up, it's going to take beyond that person's, at least that person's first term, if not their second, because there's just so much to clean up.
One final question, Becky. I know you have to leave. Who do you like in 2016 this far?
Well, you know, it's really, really early. And, you know, people, you know, come out with poll after poll, and, you know, even polls don't mean a whole lot right now. But, you know, I think for the first time in a long time, we have got Republicans and conservatives. They're two different things. Again, another topic for another day. But
yes,
the GOP has, we've got a deep bench this time around. We've got a really deep bench. I like Ted Cruz. I like Rand Paul. I like, oh my gosh, there's probably seven or eight people I could tell you that I, Marco Rubio, Scott Walker, Carly Fiorina. She thinks fast on her feet. She has some really great answers to questions, and she's definitely not afraid of Hillary Clinton. I think she would wipe the floor with her in debate. And so if you look at our bench versus the Democrats, they've got all of their eggs in the Hillary Clinton basket. Well, Hillary Clinton comes with a lot of baggage, and if it starts to build up, of course the media is going to protect her, but if it gets to a point where they're unable to, Who are they going to nominate if need be? Who are they going to nominate in her place? Bernie Sanders, you know. And you know, they love to talk about Republicans being the party of old white men, Really? Well, I see Ben Carson, I see Ted Cruz, I see Marco Rubio, I see Carly Fiorina. Really, where are the old white guys this time around? If they can point them out, I'd love to see them. But
exactly.
It looks good right now. It looks very good right now. But again, it's early, so it'll be fun. It'll be fun for political geeks like me to see what happens.
Yes. Well, it should be very, very interesting. I'm looking forward to the debates, as I mentioned. You know, I think Hillary Clinton is going to milk this Supreme Court decision to her advantage because she thinks she has the gay vote all around and that it will pose a threat to whoever the candidate is.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, the gay vote is part of her base. It's part of the hardcore Democrat base.
Mm-hmm.
And
I don't think that,
you know,
she,
for anybody who doesn't think that the Democrat Party has gone hard left anymore. There are no Democrats anymore. There are no John Kennedy Democrats anymore. It's a dead breed. I think probably I actually do have one friend that I think probably would classify herself as a John Kennedy Democrat. And you know what? Those people aren't kooks. They don't hate America. The majority of the Democrat Party right now is just, you know, they're all but socialists. And again, it's you know, lack of attention, lack of education, you know, you name it.
Exactly. Well, I surely appreciate you taking time out to educate us about the Constitution and to talk about the issues. I want to thank you so much. This is my wife, Becky Noble. She's the best. She writes so well. She thinks so well in her feet. I know you think I'm biased, but it's the truth. Please catch her show this Friday, The Conservative Cauldron, on the Blog Talk Radio Network, 11 a.m., and you're going to hear a lot of good stuff about all the issues. Thank you, Becky.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
God bless. Have a great day. That's my wife, Becky. This is exciting. I never would have dreamed that this would happen, but I knew that this past Friday these issues were something that she has studied and that she has wrote about, and she does a great job on her radio program articulating the different issues of our culture, and she's an amazing woman, and I just said, you know, you got to be on my program. I've got to let people hear what you know and how you handle yourself and how you know the issues. And she does so good at that. I hope you agree with me. So we have went through the issues. I know it kind of rapidly because of time constraints, but I want you to think with me today. I want you to think deeply about our freedoms, about the Constitution. I want you to just take some time and maybe just get online and go to those websites that talk about the Constitution, the quotes from the different amendments, and then think about what happened this past Friday. I want to make this really, really clear. Neither Becky and I are not in any way discriminatory against gay people. I personally don't agree with their worldview and their choice of marriage. I don't at all. But we don't hate them. We don't discriminate against them. We were talking basically this morning, more importantly, about the issue of the attacks on our Constitution, which if we don't be careful, the slippery slope keeps getting slippery, and one day our freedoms may not be here. Because remember what Lincoln said, if we're going to be in danger, it's going to be because our nation is destroyed from within. He had some insight hundreds of years ago about what could happen to us, and unless our government, our Supreme Court, begins to read the documents in context, our freedoms are being eroded. And so it's sad to say. This was a historic moment, I know, for many, many people this past Friday, but what I would ask and beg you to do is please look at what the Constitution says, and please consider your freedoms. Most importantly, this is what's being attacked, is our personal freedoms as states people, as people that have the right to vote on. We the people, as Becky writes in her blog, Death to America, is slowly being eroded. It's being ignored, and we dare not redefine marriage and ignore we the people. This is dangerous ground to be on. As we think about the issues today and think about what happened last Friday, I got this perfect song from a great worship artist. Her name is Carrie Job, who talks about us as Christians, the church. We are the light. We are the light of the world. Let's listen to it right now on the cross in the desert.
Every secret,
Carrie Job reminding us of who we are. We're salt and light in our culture. We are the city that shines. It's a quote, I think, also from our former President Reagan, the city that shines. I'm thinking of what Carrie is saying, and I'm reminded of our responsibility to make a difference in our culture with not only preaching the gospel. That is the calling of every Christian, to speak the word of God in that context, to call people to faith in Christ through the preaching of the gospel. But I think we also have a great calling as Christians to make a difference in our culture, and that means governments, and that means City Hall. That means those institutions where we can become a part of to be salt and light in our culture. And thank you so much, Carrie Job, for reminding us of our calling. We are the light of the world, Jesus says. I got a very special song here from a very special friend. Her name is Melissa Shahzad. She was on my program just last time and talked a little bit about her husband being a Pakistani Christian, and she mentioned the plight of the Pakistani Christians. Actually, she just posted something in the chat room that by the end of this year, there will be 7,000 Pakistani Christians seeking asylum in Thailand, and thousands more. They're fleeing the terrorism, the discrimination, the death that's happening in Pakistan. Christians are not really welcome there. But Melissa is also a prolific gospel singer, and she has a couple of songs I want to play for you right now on the cross in the desert. The first one is the 23rd Psalm, and then it's called God is Love. Let's listen to Melissa right now on the cross in the desert.
The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restores my soul. He leadeth me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. For thou art with me, thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest the table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil, my cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever.
Oh,
Very nice from my good friend Melissa Shahzad. That is her song, God is So Good, and reciting the 23rd Psalm. Really nice job there, Melissa. I really was blessed by that. And thank you for allowing me to share your song here on the cross in the desert. Well, this morning we have tackled the cultural issue, perhaps the most historic issue of our time. And I want to talk to you about that issue today, perhaps from an angle you never considered before. I think something you may want to know about me is I try my best to talk compassionately and from the heart to those I disagree with, because I don't feel as though that engaging in rhetorical debates is very productive. I believe in debate. I believe in standing for the truth, and we do that respectfully. We should, as we heard from Carrie Job, we are the light. We should speak the truth, but in love, and we do that. I think it's the most important thing we can do. And I was thinking about the issue, the Supreme Court decision. I know that many Christians can respond in a couple of ways. And some could quote from Romans 1:18 about the wrath of God. We could quote from Leviticus and a number of passages in Luke's gospel about the time of Noah. We could talk about Sodom and Gomorrah. These are all things that have their importance. And these are issues that need to be talked frankly about, of course. But I wonder if we've considered another way to talk to those in the same-sex marriage crowd. And I was thinking prior to this program, I want to talk to them today. I don't know if they listen to this program, but they may come upon it. And I think the thing I have learned of being a Christian all these many years is that what Peter says something very profound that we need to remember. Be always ready to give to every man an answer for the hope that is within you, but do it with gentleness. When I was in seminary a few years ago, my teacher was Jerem Bars, and one of the things he said in our apologetics class, he gave us an assignment. He said to us, I want you to write a paper to your unbelieving friend, and I want you to be a witness to them. And then he followed up the statement with this. He said, if you are disrespectful and insulting in any way, I will fail you. Wow. Wait a minute, Jerem Bars. I mean, look what Jesus did to the crowd of religious leaders. He rebuked them for their hypocrisy. You know, you're saying, no, he was right. Let your speech be seasoned with grace. Because I know we're emotionally involved in this issue as Christians. And so there is a tendency for us to throw stones instead of holding our hands out in love and compassion. Tendency for all of us to do that on really any issue. So when we're faced with this issue and we want to talk to the crowd that's opposed to the biblical teaching on homosexuality, we want to talk to them in some way. What is one way we can talk to them? Well, Peter says, give them an answer with gentleness and respect. Speak the truth in love, Ephesians says. Let your speech be seasoned with grace, Colossians 4. So does that mean, though, somehow we are dummying down the judgment of God if we speak that way? No. The Bible is very clear on this issue. Why is God so angry about this? Well, first of all, God created us, male and female. There are distinctions, ontological distinctions, bodily distinctions, and there are vocational distinctions between men and women. And Jesus affirmed that God made them this way, that the two would become one flesh, male and female, would leave their father and mother and become the one flesh. So Jesus, from his very beginning of his ministry, affirmed the teaching of Genesis, affirmed that God created them male and female, and that marriage, defined by Jesus, is male and female, man and woman. He made it very, very clear. Now, there are some that will say, well, now, wait a minute. Jesus never spoke out about homosexuality. Oh, he didn't use the phrase, but he referred to the sin of homosexuality. He referred to a lot of sins. So the claim that Jesus was silent about this is simply not true. Let me show you. Jesus says in Mark chapter 7, it is what comes from within that defiles you. He's saying that because the Pharisees and the scribes are talking about his disciples not washing their hands. And Jesus says, look, you want to know what the real problem is? It's from within, out of a person's heart, that comes evil thoughts. And then he uses the word sexual immorality, porneia, which refers in part to the same-sex marriage. So Jesus did say that it was wrong. In this passage, he made it very, very clear. But I wanted to talk to you about this issue from another angle today. When we study the Bible, we come across a crowd of people known as lepers. And think about it this way, disease. Disease is a constant reminder of just how much things have changed since God pronounced a curse on the earth. At first, everything was very good, but Adam's sin brought death and decay into the world. And one of the most well-known examples of debilitating disease in this sin-cursed creation is Mycobacterium leprae, the infectious bacterial agent of leprosy. Now, leprosy is discussed quite often in the Bible. While its definition in modern times is different from biblical times, there is no doubt that the definitions overlap. And the modern form of the disease still illustrates important spiritual lessons today. Now, I want to tell you about them. The term leprosy, including leper, lepers, leprosy, occurs 68 times in the Bible, 55 times in the Old Testament, and 13 times in the New. In the Old Testament, the instances of leprosy most likely meant a variety of infectious skin diseases, and even mold and mildew on clothing and walls. So the precise meaning of the leprosy in both the Old and New Testament, it's disputable, but it probably includes what the modern-day version of leprosy is, Hansen's disease. The term Hansen's disease was given in 1873, describing the bacteria. And you know, lepers can't feel pain. They can be losing a part of their body and not feel the pain because leprosy attacks the skin, the respiratory tract, the optic nerve deteriorates. And so the loss of pain sensation is due to the nerve damages of leprosy. Now, in the work of Dr. Paul Brand, he's the late world-renowned orthopedic surgeon and leprosy physician, talks about this issue. It destroys nerve endings that carry pain signals. Therefore, patients with advanced leprosy experience a total loss of physical pain. And when these people cannot sense, touch, or feel pain, they tend to injure themselves or be unaware of an injury caused by an outside agent. In fact, some leprosy patients have had their fingers eaten by rats in their sleep because they were totally unaware of what's happening. I bring up this issue because lepers were set apart from the community, set apart from the general society in Jewish times. They were kind of that crowd of people that you were afraid to touch or afraid to mingle with. So they were separated because of their disease. And that's my point. All of us have that disease called sin. And yet we mingle with each other every day. We as sinners are touching sinners every day in our conversation, in our relationships. We are all sinners. We have broken God's holy law. But like the leper, we have taken the special class of sinners and ostracized them away from us. And you know who I'm referring to. And so the question we have to ask ourselves is, as we look at who Jesus is and we see his love and compassion in action, what does he do when he is approached by the leper? Or we could say it another day, another way. What would Jesus do if he was approached by the homosexual, like the leper, the ostracized crowd? We have an example in Scripture of what Jesus did. And I want you, if you have your Bible, to look at Matthew chapter 8. When he came down from the mountain, great crowds followed him. And behold, a leper came to him and knelt before him, saying, "Lord, if you will, you can make me clean." And Jesus stretched out his hand and touched him, saying, "I will be clean." And immediately his leprosy was cleansed. And Jesus said to him, "See that you say nothing to anyone, but go, show yourself to the priests, and offer the gift that Moses commanded for a proof to them." This is Jesus in action. And Jesus, the compassionate, merciful one, that is demonstrating to you and me that he wants the homosexual to be free, to be completely cleansed, to be made whole. You see, as I mentioned, we as sinners, we live all together in different strata of life. We intermingle with each other on a daily basis. We don't know people very well. We see them on the streets. We work with them at our jobs. We have business partnership relationships with them. We are all sinners collected together. But somehow, we have taken a special class of sinners and ostracized them from us. And instead of throwing stones at them, we should be willing to reach out with grace to them, as we see here as what Jesus did. The leper came to Jesus and sought him out and knelt before him. "Jesus, if you will, you can make me clean." Now you may say, well, I don't know too many gay people that want that to happen. In fact, they don't think that there's anything wrong with them. They will testify that, look, I was born this way, I can't help this, in so many words. But how many of them do you know that inside they're battling this every day? They're struggling against this every day. But because they're afraid to speak out, they just stay with the flow and the crowd of people. There may be very, very many gay people that have rejoiced about this decision. But do you know them deep down inside? They could be like this leper who comes to Jesus and says, "There's something wrong with me. What's wrong with me? But I know this. You can make me whole." What's so sad is that some of us who represent Jesus as the light of the world are pushing them away from our hate speech. I know that we are willing to tell the truth, and we should. The Bible says so. But that same hand that upholds God's law, the other hand should be reaching out with grace I like what Nagme said this morning in her status. We have become the same religious leaders that Jesus had issues with. She writes, it is easier for us to throw stones and justify it by calling it standing up for righteousness. And rather, she writes, we need to lay down our life for our enemies and plead with God on their behalf. So rightly said, Nagme. All of us struggle with righteousness. We want to see God's law upheld. But we need to understand that the majority of people are dead inside, spiritually dead. They can't love God's law because they're dead. And so our responsibility is not to throw stones, but to reach out with hands of grace. The leper asked, what will you do to make me whole, Jesus? Will you do this? And our response should be like Jesus, I want you to be whole. I want you to be clean. And so we need to reach out with that touch of grace. You see, we can be passionate about our issues, and we should be passionate, and we should be passionate about God's truth and law. But we need to reach out with the other hand that says, you know, you're no different than me. I'm a sinner too. I've broken God's law. And so are you. I'm not better than you. I'm in need of forgiveness just like you are. I'm in need of grace just like you are. And Jesus didn't turn the leper away. He embraced the leper and said, I want you to be clean. Because Jesus is the one that makes our hearts clean again. He has come to set the captives free. The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, Jesus said, to anoint me to set captives free. And when we as Christians reach out with the hand of grace, instead of pointing the finger, and invite people to know the one that cleanses us from within, that is grace. Grace. I want to share with you, some of my Iranian friends, when they saw my posting about the Constitution under attack, and I explained to them that, a couple of my friends that lived in Iran were very sad. Let me explain to you why. In Iran, you know, the homosexual is hated and oftentimes are killed. ISIS throws homosexuals off the tops of roofs to their death. And so my Iranian friends that have come here to live, when they hear about this decision, they're thinking, this is the land of freedom, and this is great. And they're saying to Ahmadinejad, look at what you can't control here. They're welcomed here. And they have a point. My Iranian friends have a point. This is the land of freedom. People can have true freedom. But I explained to them, look, I have some problems with what can happen as a result of this decision. I explained to them, I am not against gay people in a malicious way. I don't hate them. I disagree with them deeply on this issue, but I don't hate them. And so it's a struggle for my Iranian friends to understand my position because they know how the gay is treated in Iran. And I want to reassure them, even though I can't put the rainbow on my profile picture, that I still believe in freedom and I still believe in the rights of people, we the people. And even though I deeply disagree with them, I'm not going to fight with them. I'm going to do what Jesus says to do. And I'm going to reach out with the hand of grace so they can be clean and whole again. And so I say this to many Iranians that even support my program. I am certainly not a person that hates gay people. I deeply disagree, but I don't hate. And our government here doesn't do what your government does in Iran. They don't kill homosexuals here. Oh, there may be some militant ones that would like to, but I don't support them, not whatsoever. Our government here, even though I disagreed with their decision, is not going to kill gay people. They did give them freedom in this issue. And so it's much different than the Iranian government who would seek to kill them. And there's a big difference living here. So I wanted to set the record straight with my Iranian friends on this issue. Because I know when they look at what life was like in Iran, and then they see the freedom here, they're wondering how their friend can be so against this decision. And while I'm against the decision, I don't hate the homosexual, and I think you know that. And today we've been talking about leprosy, and I thought this had an interesting parallel to the gay crowd. And I hope that you understand where I'm coming from on this, because God's word is very, very clear. God hates the sin, but he loves the sinner. Many, many gay people have left this movement and have come to faith in Christ. And they come to the conclusion that this was a choice, it was an addiction, and that it was wrong. And so let's remember what Jesus said to the leper. Asked to be cleansed. He said, "Lord, if you will, you can make me clean." And Jesus said, "I will be clean." It's very clear. God loves the homosexual. He hates the sin, but he loves them as people. And that should be our attitude too. That should be our ongoing attitude with anyone. Remember where you and I have come from. Remember the darkness that we came out of. Remember, if it wasn't for the grace of God, there would go I too. An incredibly good book to read on this subject is Philip Yancey's Amazing Grace book. He has a lot of insight on this issue, and he has a lot of good illustrations. I borrowed a little bit from him because I think it was right on. The Amazing Grace book by Philip Yancey. What's so amazing about grace? A great author who touches us deeply where we need to be touched. And so I credit him with a lot of the illustrations that he was referring to. I just put it in my own words, but he gets the credit. A good author. And if you would read his book, What's So Amazing About Grace, I think you'll come to some of the same conclusions that I myself have come to. But I wanted to speak to you today about this issue. But I also want to remind us, so much has been happening in the past couple of weeks. Please remember, today is June 29th. Tomorrow is the deadline. Please email the White House. Please call the White House. Please be a voice of hope and freedom for Saeed. Please take your time out of your busy life and make a difference in his life. 1 million plus signatures have said to our government, bring Saeed home. It's been 1,006 days. And Saeed and Amir Hekamati languish in prison in Iran. Please don't forget them. Please remember those in prison. Please pray that our government will speak out very strong and make them the precondition to these talks. They need to be. They need to be. It's human rights versus nuclear rights. So tomorrow there will be no program, not until Thursday, and hopefully Thursday, which is the 2nd of July, we will have more information about what will happen with our dear brother Saeed. I want to say thank you so much, Melissa, for your beautiful song. Thank you so much for those that have come to the cross in the desert today. God bless you. I will see you this Thursday. Have an awesome week.
love.